everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell with Midwifery Business Consultation, and I have Izzy with Contemporary Insurance here with me today, and I would love for him to just talk. I get so many questions from midwives about malpractice insurance and coverage, whether they're working in the hospital, birth center, home. There's just so much discussion about it. It's almost this myth to business owners of what it is and what does it really cover. So Izzy, if you can tell us a little bit about yourself and why you started this company and just your background.
Hi, Leslie. Sure, I'm happy to. And hi for any of you that are watching this clip. So I'm an attorney by training. About 40 years ago, I started an insurance agency as well, focusing on medical malpractice insurance issues, which morphed over time as my wife and I became interested in having a baby at home into providing coverage for midwives. About 30 years ago, we started a dedicated program that covered only midwives in the program, and it's been working very, very well. And we're happy to provide these services over time. I have two grandchildren who now have been delivered by midwives and one that was delivered at home. And so we're very supportive of the notion and would love to address these malpractice issues with you to kind of get the haze out of the way and clarify what they are.
Yeah, I just hear a lot of midwives, especially with their private practice, the number one thing that's always talked about is cost, and it's not so much the value. What are you getting for that? I think as midwives, we forget we get such great quality care, but then we don't look at the products we're purchasing for our business in that same mindset. If you want to talk a little bit of what your experience has been with just what is malpractice insurance and what is the goods and bads of having it as a midwife?
We all know that having babies in a large majority of cases is a beautiful experience with everything happening right. And when it's all over, you have this beautiful baby and you're happy. But in the small number of cases where things don't go well, you still end up with a beautiful baby and a happy child. But you now have a parent who says, oh my God, I have a lifetime of care ahead of me and I can't handle it on my own. And maybe I should sue the midwife or the practitioner that helped me deliver the baby and see that as a source of funds. I will tell you that in the almost 40 years that we've been insuring midwives, we have paid out tens of millions of dollars in claims. So it's not illusory. It's not something that people talk about to scare midwives. The truth is we live in a society of physicians, and people are always looking for deep pockets or often looking. It's not to say that every time there's a bad outcome, you're going to get sued. But if there is a bad outcome and it's cerebral palsy or dystocias or things like that, and parents recognize that they may have a lifetime of care and they may not have resources to pay for it, they're going to begin to look for it, or people will encourage them to look for it. So that's the reason for malpractice. Malpractice insurance, unless you spread the risk of you being the one that gets sued amongst a whole slew of other midwives, so that where the claim has to pay the money there for. The one thing that needs to get understood is that the amount that one pays for malpractice insurance is not at all related to the amount of income that one makes. It's related totally to the amount that's paid out in claims by an insurance company for all of the midwives that are insured. So if you insure 1,000 midwives and you have $1 million in claims, you need to be able to spread that cost amongst those 1,000 midwives. The fact is there aren't enough midwives to spread that risk well. I mean, you know, the most that are insured, I would say at any given time, is never more than 5,000 right now. And so that's a very small group to spread the risk across.
So you're hinting that if we get more midwives to do malpractice with their businesses, it'll lower the cost for all of us?
Absolutely will. That I can guarantee you, because it's not a correlation that more midwives means more suits. It's just really the number of babies that are being delivered and the like. But at the end of the day, yes, the bigger the pool, the lower the cost should be, because you can spread it amongst more people. And the more availability there'll be, because right now there are a limited number of companies that sell it because they don't feel they can do risk spreading appropriately. As far as the cost goes, there are a number of things that can make the cost easier, and we'll talk about some of those today. One of the issues is that many many companies provide new midwives just out of their training and newly licensed with discounts. So for example, our program, your first year, you get a 75% discount on the premium. In the second year, you get 50%, and the third year, you get 25%. So that right off the bat. Now, if you've been around for 10 years of practicing, you just open up a birth center, you don't get the advantage of that because you're no longer a new midwife. But in addition, there are two types of coverage. One is called plain stay, and the other is called occurrence. And there are lots of blends of those two types of concepts. But an occurrence policy has a level premium. There's no discounting in it that way. And a claim stay policy starts off usually at about a third of the price of an occurrence policy. And it grows over usually a five-year period until it hits approximately the same premium as occurrence. And the reason that it's more expensive is that with a claims-based policy, the company reserves the right to charge you a one-time extra premium when you cancel that policy that covers all future claims. With an occurrence policy, the company automatically covers you forever for any claim that comes in for the year that you had that coverage. With claims made, if you stop paying premium, unless you make that one-time premium payment called the tail, you lose your coverage. So,
could we compare it a little bit to like life insurance? There's term and there's whole life where you're paying for the time you're using it. And if you want more, you have to get a conversion or you have to pay for the more. You're paying for extra benefits to cover after the fact.
So you might make that comparison as it could work. Or what you just simply could say is that claims made only pays while you're paying the premium. And it only pays for claims that you've reported to the company while you're paying the premium. So you could, for example, have a bad outcome, report to the company, stop paying the premium, and most policies will cover you even if the claim comes in 10 years later because you reported it to them. There are a few exceptions to that rule, not for this, more complicated than for this video. But generally speaking, once you report it, it's that company's responsibility. That's even if you don't make this one-time payment. But if you make the one-time payment, then you have. So let's give an example. If a midwife's premium is $10,000 a year, with most companies, the tail is usually $20,000 in that neighborhood. So you make a one-time premium payment of $20,000, which is a lot of money, and you're done. With our program, we cap that at 115%. So if you're paying $10,000 as your premium, you make a one-time premium of $11,500, and you have lifetime coverage. You could also get tails that are of shorter duration, so it's not a whole lifetime. It would be 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, or 5 years. Our program isn't definite. You've got to coverage forever. So those are important. Those are very important considerations.
Well, to come back to one thing you pointed out that I really never thought about, I guess the mindset of the midwife, because we don't understand the insurance companies, if there was a bad outcome, we're like, I don't want to say anything because my rate next year is going to be double. But it sounds more from what you just said that you want to be honest and have good communication with your representative at your insurance company because it protects you. So if you want to dig a little more into that.
That's a very insightful statement, and that's correct. Generally speaking, insurance companies do not charge more money to insurers for reporting claims. They charge more money to insurers when they've had to defend the claim. And then even if they defend the claim and win, you still could land up with an increase because it might cost $250,000 in legal fees to defend the claim. So they're not going to charge you $250,000, but they may increase you 10 or 15% to cover that. But it's very important in most cases to report a claim. Now, if you have a policy that doesn't lock in a claim by reporting it, that's a whole different story because then if you report a claim and it's not locked in, you could never leave that company unless you make that tail premium payment. And those are complicated things. I actually have a blog that people can go to read all about that if they want more. And I'm more than happy to answer questions about that. But I will reserve that for a later conversation. Otherwise,
yes, we'll definitely save some teasers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Yeah. I think there's a lot of myths along midwives. A lot of conversations when we have these tough conversations about just the budget and the numbers, it's looked at the little piece versus the big foundation and the value that malpractice, because they don't hear very often of the stories, but when they hear about them, they're just so bad and devastating. It makes a very successful practice go under. And so that has a high risk and value to it. So I think a lot of times we have to, as business owners, not look at the cost, but what is that cost getting you, whether it's real or perceived. It's a very serious, and you can have the, like you said, it's, you're paying out on claims, whether there was anything wrong done or not. It's the jury, it's the system. And so you need protection for that. I know a lot of midwives that are still paying on claims because they didn't have it. And there was, I mean, it's just, it's sad. And I don't think midwives, we as a profession and protecting our ladies and our business long-term, have to think differently.
I think it's true. I think that some midwives have heard comments that say, if you don't have malpractice insurance, lawyers won't sue you. And actually that's true, mm-hmm. but only to an extent. So if you have cerebral palsy baby that's going to need a lifetime of care, and you have a big law firm on the other side, and it knows it's going to cost the law firm easily $250,000 just to get into the case and to sue on behalf of the plaintiff, and if it doesn't win, it won't get any money. Those law firms are not going to sue midwives if they don't, unless the midwives have significant personal assets. But these guys that advertise at 2:00 in the morning, if you have a phone, you have a lawyer, they will go after your personal assets, and something that you need to be concerned about.
Yeah, a lot of people think, oh, I have my LLC, I'm protected. And I'm like, it's a lot more complicated than that. And depending on how, if you're following all the rules within your state, but also just if you've done true negligence and didn't follow standards, didn't keep up with things, they can still go after your personal assets. But I think there's a lot of education that just, and that's the point of these conversations, is I want tough love to midwives. I want them to be successful. I want them to know. And I'm learning lots from you today too. So I think it's really important. When you talk about the two types of insurance, what other questions, if a midwife is considering malpractice and calling different companies to compare, what other great questions should they ask?
So actually, that's actually very, very important. So, and it comes from two perspectives. One, the questions you ask the insurance company, and two, what questions should you ask your prospective employer to make sure that he or she's taking care of you as well. So in terms of the insurance company, what you want to ask is, what is their AMS rating, which is a financial indicator of whether the company will be around for the long term, and does it have the financial wherewithal to handle claims. So for example, anything with an A-minus rating with AM Best is, we consider it to be acceptable. That means the company has probably hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of assets to defend you and to pay claims. So that would be the first question. The second question is to actually ask them for a copy of the policy and have someone you're working with review it. So it's too detailed right now to get information about the difference between things like demand triggers and claims triggers and policies. But if a policy has what's called an incident trigger, that means the minute you report an incident, that incident is covered forever. But that's really where a broker like us can come in handy. We have a policy that we do not charge for our advice. We make money on commissions on selling the policies. So if we have a program especially for students, that's a very inexpensive program. And we tell our students that when you're negotiating for your first job, call us. We'll walk you through the negotiating process so that you know what to ask for. And one of the things to ask for is, am I getting claims made or current policy? And if it's claims made, are you going to pay the tail if I leave? And if the answer is no, then that's the question you need to know about.
Well, and I think a lot of nurse midwives, especially their first job or even experienced, just don't know what to ask. They're excited. They got a job because they're worried about the salary. Like on my side of the education piece is I go through their employment contract with them. I help with the benefit translating and what are you getting? What can you negotiate? What can you not negotiate? And having somebody on the team and just knowing like you're creating a good foundation of knowledge in the midwives, because in time they may start their own practice or do something different, and knowing those things. Yeah, there's just, it's kind of this foreign myth with midwives of what malpractice insurance is and does and what it is all about.
Yeah, I would add to that, which is an interesting perspective, and that is, as a midwife, you know you're not perfect, and you may well make a mistake. And if the mistake you make causes injury, it's nice to know that there's someone who, while you may not be able to compensate, that there is someone there protecting you that will be able to compensate this family for the mistake that you made.
Yeah, well, even just coverage levels, people make assumptions. Well, I go work for a hospital, they're the deep pocket. And I'm like, it depends. If you didn't follow the hospital privileges and the policies, they may or may not protect you and be the deeper pocket. And $200,000 coverage is very different than $1 million coverage and what those coverage levels mean.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely correct. You definitely need to know that. But at the end of the day, you need to understand that you don't want to expose your assets. Don't want to expose yourself to potential financial harm.
No, I think you're such a wealth of knowledge, and I appreciate you, Izzy, getting on here with me.
My pleasure.
What advice would you give midwives, like, as far as would it make more sense to have, do you do like group plans, or is it each individual midwife? So if they're starting solo, that's easy. But if they've got 3 to 5 midwives, do you guys hybrid different policy coverages?
So what I would say is at the end of the day, the coverage is basic. The basic is if you get sued for professional negligence, the policy will cover you. If you do this as an individual or do it as a group, really doesn't have significant impact on the premium or the exposure. In a normal midwifery practice of 5 midwives, easily 2 or 3 of the midwives will touch each patient. Even if you are the only midwife that's serving this patient, if you have 5 midwives, they're going to take a call. And if a call comes in when you're not there, the initial call that comes in, the midwife that answers, that may not be that designated midwife for that patient, may answer the questions. And then if that midwife hears that the patient really needs to speak to her midwife, will then direct it there. So the mere fact that that midwife on call took the call, she's now on the file, she's not to be sued.
Yeah. And I wholeheartedly agree, whether you have 1 or 10 midwives, every single one should have malpractice. More my question, I know a couple companies will do group policies. Like if you're part of a very large healthcare system, sometimes they'll self-insure and they'll do a I just was curious if it makes a difference, someone presenting to you with a large birth center versus one midwife, if the premium rate is just based on each midwife versus like a group coming to you. That was more my curiosity.
Okay. So the answer is both. Certainly the cost per midwife for a single midwife will be more than the cost midwife in a 20 midwife group. Okay. So in a 20 midwife group, there will be premium reductions that come from the scale of the practice.
Okay.
Fully agree. Having said that, it's very hard to form midwifery practices with more than 5 midwives in them. There are some out there, no question, and there are some that are even more significant than that. But it's very hard for an independent midwife to form a group that's going to have more than 3, 4, 5 midwives.
Yeah. Well, my vision was like I've brainstormed with a few of them that are all solo and want to like pool resources for supplies or make an umbrella LLC. Like there's creative ways that if there's like 8, 10 midwives out there that want to make their practices, but there's just creative ways. So that's why I was just curious that yes, the most midwives aren't going to be able to open a 20 midwife practice franchise the next day. But if there's people that are solo and like, I'm tired of being solo, I want us all to merge together, there are benefits to that that I wanted to bring up with your coverage options. So
and absolutely you're correct. My comment is more in terms of geographic distribution. Okay. Of all the midwives that serve the United States. And, you know, can you actually, if you're not in a major city, can you find 10 midwives to form a group with? And if the answer is yes, that's great. And if the answer is no, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, in some areas it is an option, in some areas it's not. But yeah, I think that's part of the barrier is there's so many women that want to become midwives. There's a lot of myths out there of what a midwifery practice looks like. And there's a lot of misunderstandings of, I can't make any money. If I wanted to protect myself, I wanted to do this. So I wanted with your knowledge and expertise to help midwives understand the importance of malpractice insurance. Is there a couple examples or suggestions you would give to midwives of how, yes, it happens once in a while, but just reinforcing how fragile your practice is without having just that umbrella protection?
Sure. So let me give you the best example. In fact, when I've spoken at ACNM conventions and elsewhere, the best example I think I can give, and that is you're laboring with a mother. You realize that you need to transfer, and you say, you know, we need to transfer. Let's get you out of here and into a hospital. And the mother says, give me a little bit longer. And you say, we really need to get you. We need to transfer you. And she said, please, I want to have this baby naturally. I want to have this baby here, whether it's at home or a birth center. And you say, okay, we'll give it another half an hour. You just made a claim against you for malpractice indefensible. Because if the baby is born with injuries and the plaintiff's lawyer gets in there and the plaintiff says, midwife, didn't you recommend transferring a half hour before you did? Yeah, I did. And did you ultimately delay for a half hour? Yes. Why? Because the mom asked. And then the lawyer says, well, obviously, the delay in transfer is what caused this baby to have an injury. Had you transferred this child immediately, this mother and child immediately, we may not have a lawsuit here today or an injury. And the midwife says, well, in my judgment, I felt that we could do another half hour. I was just being extra careful. So he says, aha, you're being extra careful. That's what you should have been at the beginning. And you just lost your case. So you may think that you are doing everything the way you should be doing it, but you have to remember plaintiff's counsels are extremely good at what they do and extremely good at tripping you up. And you are, if you're 100% honest, that plaintiff's attorney will then make his case by saying you didn't exercise the standard of care appropriate for what you had in front of you. And if you had, the odds are that we wouldn't be here in court today.
Hmm. Oh, well, I could see a whole nother conversation for a day of, like, if you're comfortable, commonly things like with safety and policies and thought process, because we don't want to live in fear, but we also want to think, okay, this woman, we're trying to protect her, her baby, our future women, we're going to take care of our families. Like, there's a lot of decisions going. And I think in birth and women, our innate nature is most births are normal and we want to support women in their choices, but they're not in the right state of mind at that moment. And that's easily, you can't defend that in court. It is challenging. And so, yeah, it's a balancing act when we're midwives. We want to support women, but we've got to support our future women and our families too. So if you want, Izzy, will you please tell us how people can get a hold of you? The best contact information, your website. And,
sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. You can get hold of us on www.cisinsurance.com. Or you can reach us by calling our office at 301-933-3373. Our website actually has an intake form if you want to get quotes from us or things like that. We're very easy to reach. We're very responsive. And we love the work that we do.
Well, thank you. And I know the last thing I want to put in about your kids, especially the generational support of midwifery. Tell us a little bit about their business they're doing.
Sure. Two of my boys, actually, are my youngest, my oldest, and the families that started a website called PebbleParentsPlural.com, in which they support women who are just after birth for 2 months for issues that deal with baby not sleeping, lactation, postpartum depression, pelvic floor disorders. All kinds of things, and you know, we all know that from the time a baby is born for about 2 months, mothers have almost no one to turn to until that first pediatric visit. Now, midwives obviously normally provide those services, but it may well be that that they need some assistance with that, and Pebble Parents does that, and it does it very, very well.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely going to have to connect with your sons because I'd love to have them on as well and hear how their stories with their midwifery journey. And it's amazing to have supporters in all directions of businesses advocating for midwives. So thank you.
Our youngest had both of his kids delivered by midwives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so Izzy, I thank you for your time. Sorry, you go ahead. I'm going to stop interrupting you.
No. My pleasure. It's a pleasure speaking with you, Leslie. And anything I can do to help, I'm happy to.
Okay, perfect. Well, we'll have you on again. We'll talk more topics. Maybe I'll pick the brain of the midwives to get some Q&A options of what they'd love to learn from you about.
Wishing you well in your endeavor as well. Be well now.
Okay. Bye, Izzy.